The Truth News Network. Today's noise giving you heartburn? D-A-N. That's how you spell relief. TNN.
The Truth News Network.
Here's Dan Newman.
I think we need some help, folks. I can't figure it out. I'm not a doctor. I hope you've got your arms around it. And just when we think we have it figured out, something else goes wrong. You know what? It's bad in U.S. government. Really, really bad. And it seems like instead of getting better, it's getting worse. Well, now congressional Democrats have two hot potatoes on their plate. Not one, but two. And they're not new. We've just identified them, I guess. Number one is impeachment. Number two is Middle East security, especially right now with a bullet, the nation of Iran. Democrats all agree on one thing. I'm going to speak softly, so listen carefully. What's that one thing they agree on? It's all Donald Trump's fault. Everything that's going wrong in Washington is Donald Trump's fault. In Wednesday's House Democrats press conference following their caucus meeting, and I think they have one now every Wednesday, several Dems tried to make reporters in the room comfortable that they, Democrats, have all the answers for both impeachment and Iran. Those reporters, as often happens, lobbed nothing but softballs at whoever stood at the podium and was in front of the microphone. The questions asked centered on two things. If and when will the Speaker transmit those two articles of impeachment to the Senate, and under what conditions, if she will? And what are the next steps in place for Congress to take so that they can guarantee Americans the Middle East is not going to erupt into a world war? You know, the Democrats, they've got all the answers for everything. Well, the Dems in the room were consistent about only one thing. They hate Donald Trump, and they alone, that's Democrats, have the know-how to operate our government effectively and can do it without any kinds of problems. Of course, to do that requires the removal of Donald Trump. If Trump is gone, there'll be no Middle East problem, there'll be nothing else wrong in America, and guess what? Everything wrong is because he made everything wrong. I bet you didn't know they felt that way. What's wrong in D.C. can be put in its entirety at the feet of a feckless U.S. Congress. That's what we're going to discuss today. For more than 200 years, Congress operated exactly as the country's founders envisioned, finding acceptable compromises on the big issues of the day, whatever the day was, while holding its authority to declare war, spend taxpayer money, and of course keep the presidency in check. Today, that model, it worked pretty well for two centuries, is just plain dead. It's been replaced by a weakened legislative branch. Believe it or not, they really are weak, even though they talk big. They're very, very weak. That old model of Congress that worked so well, it's been replaced by a weakened legislative branch in which debate is strictly eliminated, or if allowed, barely at all. Party leaders dictate the agenda of Congress. Most elected representatives rarely get any say, and government shutdowns are a regular threat due to constant failures to agree on budgets. Of course, agreeing on anything would require conversation and debate, right? They don't do that. These changes have happened pretty quickly in comparison with other government transformations throughout U.S. history. The changes picked up quickly with the politics that came in along with Barack Obama in the election of 2008. Things began to change. Remember his famous promise to America? He was going to fundamentally transform the United States. Add to that the Tea Party movement that happened right after the 08 election. With these two D.C. blockbusters, extreme partisanship in Congress since has been just a plain virus. The political center is gone. There is no middle anymore. No moderate Democrats, or at least a sufficient number to impact governing. No moderate Republicans either. Party leaders stick a licked finger into the air every morning to know how to respond to demands of their bases, while historical methods in legislation that worked so well for so long at finding consensus on pretty much everything, those are gone too. Very little of this has been covered in the news. You don't hear anything about it. But I tell you what, just because the news doesn't cover it doesn't mean it's important. It's very, very important. And just because they don't cover it doesn't change the fact that this has happened and that Americans are living through the consequences of it all, many without any understanding of why it's happened. Subsequently, Congress has become a toothless entity that is not trusted, for the most part, by members of the judiciary and executive branches of government. Not just Americans, but judges don't trust the legislative branch anymore. Of course, the White House doesn't either. And the American people do nothing but shake their heads at the daily ineptness of the most powerful legislative body on earth. Or at least it used to be. One poll today I looked at, it shows that only 17% of Americans polled approve of this U.S. Congress. That's a shame. So what's going on wrong? What's missing? One of the things is that Congress rarely debates anything anymore. When asked before the 2018 elections what were the most important issues to Americans, you remember? We talked about it here for months and months and months, and still do. Immigration, health care, and the U.S. economy. 40 years ago, Congress spent much time debating issues of the day. Americans would love to know that this Congress at least attempted in a serious way to at least address those three issues most important to Americans. Say them again. Immigration, health care, and the economy. What has been accomplished on any of these issues since the 2016 election? What has been attempted by Congress since the 2016 election? Well, let's look at those three. Immigration. A major flashpoint in recent elections, every recent elections. Immigration has been formally debated only 3 days in Congress over the past 5 years. 3 days, folks. No resolution on anything. President Trump put an offer on the table a year or so ago that gave DACA recipients a direct path to citizenship. That has been a bell cow for the Democrats for more than a decade. We got to take care of the DACA recipients. They're not here illegally because they want to be. Their parents brought them illegally. They grew up here. They're going to school or they've been through college and now they're working in the workplace. We've got to help them. Well, Democrats rejected the president's offer that he made to give them that path to permanent residency and citizenship. There have been no legislative attempts for immigration reform since, not one. Health care has been ignored by Congress, except for an occasional press conference and a speech by members of somebody on either side griping about the executive order changes implemented by the president. Once again, there have been no meaningful attempts to debate or even discuss realistic changes in healthcare. Now, we all know, everybody knows, it's screwed up. Obamacare is screwed up. And they're picking at it, trying to get rid of the worst and go back to the drawing board and improve what's there now. It hasn't happened. Congress has to do it. And then there's the economy. The economy and economic issues have been virtually ignored, except for the horrific spending that's been put in place with the recently passed budget bill. And if you remember, that happened at the last minute, simply to avoid another government shutdown. No serious discussions, little if any debate, and I'm sure you went to the meeting, the town hall meeting that your member of Congress had when they came home during this legislative process to talk to their voters and their respective citizens in their counties and parishes and states and districts, right? To get their ideas and go back and sit down at the table and debate budget issues. It didn't happen. To exacerbate the problem, a number of members of Congress, both from the House and the Senate, have simply pulled up stakes and headed back to life outside of Congress. There are a whole lot of reasons for their doing so. A lot of them were, you know, personal. Representative Jason Chaffetz, Republican of Utah, you remember him, he left Congress because he felt Congress was not going to change. He tried. He beat on the door all the time. I think he was there 4 years, 5 years, couldn't get anything done. And then another member of Congress said this. You couldn't do anything anymore, he said. That's why I left. That was Tom Coburn, the former Oklahoma Republican senator. He resigned in 2014. And a host of others have done the same thing, and a whole bunch more are headed for the door. In other words, why go up there and take a beating, which they do, There are a lot of good things that go along with being a member of Congress, but it's a whole lot of work if you do it right. And it takes power. Not a lot of those men and women up there in Congress have power. So what is the process of this congressional dysfunction? Well, we got to look back so we can look ahead. The election of Obama set off partisan moves and then counter moves. And those moves and counter moves drove Congress and its legislative processes directly into ideological corners. The far left, the far right, and everybody in between. Followed then by the election of Donald Trump. And guess what happened then? All the controversy, it went to different corners, but opposite corners again. None of these moves just happened. They were carefully planned and conducted. Whoever one wants to blame for the dysfunction, it's certainly here. I don't know who it's blamed on, who it should be blamed on. Its cost to Americans is monumental, of course. The problem's not just a Democrat problem. It's certainly not just a Republican problem. It's an American problem. And yes, it's a congressional problem. So, in an attempt to discover how and why this process has happened so we can somehow find a way to fix it, a recent study gave us some answers. First, junior senators have fewer opportunities to wade into the issues of the day, largely because Senate leaders limit the number of votes on amendments to proposed legislation. Now, here's how the process works. Somebody submits a bill, puts it out there on the floor. It's immediately accepted or rejected as to be considered. If it's accepted, it's assigned to the appropriate committee. It goes to the committee. The committee, over a period of time, they look at it, they debate it, they discuss it, they suggest some amendments. When they get something that they feel like will work for both sides of the aisle and for the American people, they'll then take it to the floor for a vote. That's the way it used to work. The number of such votes has shrunk to an all-time low under Mitch McConnell. Less than 20% of all roll calls, down from 67% from 12 years ago. In other words, one out of five actually is realistically and really discussed and debated. 20 out of 100. That's down from 67 out of 100 just 12 years ago. Former House Speaker Paul Ryan, remember him from Wisconsin? He set a record in his 2 years of leadership for the number of closed rules. Closed rules, that's the process in which leaders simply prevent anybody from offering up amendments for pending legislation. Obviously, that in itself discourages those new members of Congress from getting involved, for they have little or no standing in the power chain, and if you ain't got it, you got to be in good with somebody that's got it. That's power, of course. And then committees need to consider legislation, and they're doing it less than ever today. As recently as 05 and 06, House committees met 449 times to consider actual legislation, and Senate committees met 252 times. By 2015 and 16, those numbers plummeted from 449 in the House to 254, and from 252 times in the Senate to 69 times. Senate hearings on a Supreme Court nominee have always drawn significant attention, and they should. The recent circus in the Senate Judiciary Committee hearings to consider the nomination of Brett Kavanaugh to the Supreme Court illustrates just how caustic and partisan today the U.S. Senate has become. Why is that? Well, Senator Ben Sasse, a Republican from Kansas, gave his opinion of the reason for the always heated and partisan process. He said this, "Who sits on that court has always been critical, but it's more so today than ever before. Why? Because of the inaction of Congress." Listen to this now. This is Senator Ben Sasse. "Because of congressional lack of legislative efforts to make certain past legislation is adequate, complete, and legal in its contents, presidents more than ever are forced to action. Presidents fill the void when Congress cannot act, leading to lawsuits and leaving the courts to resolve disputes." And then Sasse continued, "More and more legislative authority is delegated to the executive branch every year. Both parties do it. The legislature is impotent. The legislature is weak." So what are we going to do about it? Got some ideas, some actual suggestions, a plan. We'll discuss that next at Truth News Network, truthnewsnet.org.
The truth, straight, no chaser. TNN, the Truth News Network. TNN, the Truth News Network, wants you in our army of truth seekers. Sign up today at truthnewsnet.org and never miss a story or podcast. Truth News Net has been called the most important voice in conservative American politics and is required listening in university classes as far away as Moscow. TNN is heard in every capital on every continent with listeners around the globe. If you're passionate about the truth and are horrified at the turn of world politics, you are not alone. Sign up today and never miss a fact. TNN, truthnewsnet.org.
Let's roll into our summary of what we're talking about today, a feckless, dysfunctional Congress. So what is the problem for this devolving of the U.S. Congress over the last couple of centuries? So what needs to be done to fix it? What can be done to fix it? Well, Roll Call Senior Editor David Hawkins, just before the 2018 midterm elections, addressed the above problems we've talked about today with what he calls the five M's. Take just 4 minutes and watch or listen to Mr. Hawking's ideas. I think that if we want to get things straight in Congress, we got to stop spending so much time just griping about what they're doing or not doing and talk about what needs to be straightened out. Then we've got to find a way to implement what is necessary to fix it.
30 years of covering Congress has me convinced it's more broken than at any point in my career and gets me asked time and again to explain what's gone wrong. After talking about the causes for this dysfunction with hundreds of people, lawmakers, their aides, think tank experts, lobbyists, I have reduced the diagnosis to these elements, and they're easy to remember as the five M's: money, maps, media, mingling, and masochism. Nothing has drained civility and collaboration out of the Capitol more than the incessant money chase. The total spent on congressional races surged 73% between 2000 and 2016, when it cracked $4 billion. And it's sure to get higher this time. The Supreme Court's 2010 Citizens United ruling, which said the First Amendment means not restricting what companies and other outside groups can spend, means the flow is never slowing. Members in tight races have to raise buckets of cash, of course, but those in safe seats are not immune. They have to create a sense of financial strength that scares off challengers, and then they're under huge peer pressure to raise even more money for the benefit of electorally vulnerable colleagues. So dialing for dollars is what many members do virtually to the exclusion of anything else whenever they're not expected in a committee room or on the floor, in call center cubicles at party headquarters, receptions and meals when Congress is in session, car rides between the office and the airport. All this leaves minimal time and energy for the traditional work of a functioning Congress, like studying policy options, promoting legislation, and conducting oversight. Most members represent territory almost certain to elect someone from their party, thanks a bit to population shifts, but mostly to how congressional districts are drawn. The last time control of the House changed hands, in 2010, one in four districts was competitive between the parties. One nationwide redistricting later, that's true in just one out of six seats in this year's midterm. The winning formula for everyone else is simple. Say and do everything with the base of your own party in mind, because they're the ones who will save you or stab you in the primary, and that's your only real election. For five out of six members, in other words, what works politically is being a hardened partisan, not a centrist legislator. There's no reason to predict that will change. Redistricting for the next decade is sure to have as much political gerrymandering as ever, especially since the Supreme Court has decided not to decide if that practice can ever be unconstitutional. Today's media landscape only reinforces partisan tribalism. The presence of local newspapers and TV stations in Washington has withered, so lawmakers have free rein to market their Capitol careers without much real-time scrutiny. Voters more and more ignore information that questions their views. Instead, they rely on websites and cable news that reinforces their perception of what's important and what's fake. Social media has become a political echo chamber, with the facts and arguments on the other side not admitted. Members are increasingly shaping their media presence, again, just to appeal to the base. It's tough to create a collaborative legislature when half the members don't really know the other half. But that's life at the Capitol today. Members generally spend just 3 days of every week in D.C. And since their so-called free time is all about fundraising, they spend no time getting to know someone across the aisle over a beer or a meal. Fewer and fewer of them find homes in the Washington area or move their families here. So there's no after-work bonding or weekend barbecues, which really were a thing back in the 1960s and 70s. There's a theory in psychology that low expectations tend to produce poor performance. And when everyone notices, the negative expectations are only magnified and the work only gets worse. That's the way it is in Congress today. Members have been told by their constituents for so long that they do terrible work in a terrible place. And many of them have won their seats by running down the very place they want to work. And so more and more of them are taking actions that overtly disrespect the institution, reinforcing voter expectation and driving the reputation of Congress lower and lower. In a real sense, they seem to be deriving a political success from perpetuating their own reputational pain or humiliation, which is the very essence of masochism. They have denied themselves even a small pay raise every year for a decade. Many of them sleep on their couches in their offices. They've put their staff budgets on a starvation diet, which has caused a deep brain drain of Hill aides. This gives more power to the leadership teams that are all about winning through polarization and to the lobbyists who hire the smart staffers. A functional capital would surely be a place where money was less of an obsession, where map making did not mean electoral destiny, where the media echo chamber was given a wide pass, where members spent more time making personal connections, and where the institutional self-loathing was replaced with self-respect.
Go figure. Anybody could expect Congress to work, to really do the process, do it well, do it to the best of their ability, the process that made this country the number one country on earth. Hey, that's a wrap for today. Thank you so much for being here. Feel free to spread this podcast around. I think it's something that members of your circle would really approve of, or at least get them thinking about what's going on and how to fix it. Thanks again for being a part of this. We'll see you tomorrow at Truth News Network, truthnewsnet.org.
Real truth, real news, TNN, the Truth News Network.